Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I love to help with everyday gardening questions, your gardening dilemmas. You're not out there alone. We can help you. Give us a call at 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Good morning. Lizzie's our wonderful producer. She is taking care of everything. Got a little text.
Trying to.
Yeah. Text issues going here. Whoops. There you go.
We have gremlins in our system, I'm telling you.
We do. And with us right now is my friend and special guest, Dr. Gary Bachman. He is the Extension Research Professor of Horticulture at the Coastal Research and Extension Center, Mississippi State University. Gary is host of the award-winning Mississippi State University Extension Services Southern Gardening TV. If you missed the first hour of Better Lawns and Gardens, you can go back to the podcast's first hour on iHeartRadio, Audioboom, and on our Facebook page to hear all about Gary and Katie's Heritage Cottage Urban Nano Farm in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. And you can hear his favorite tomato story. But good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Teresa. That first hour was fun.
It was. It went by so quickly, too. And so we got more coming up from you, and we're going to be taking your phone calls, your gardening questions, and my text messages have come back to normal again.
Yay.
Thank you, Lizzie. And let's hear from John Denver.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling.
Thank you so much. I love that John Denver song. And Gary, it epitomizes your urban nano farm. And what kind of tools? You don't use a rake and a hoe, do you?
No, not really. But some of the tools that I use, and you're going to love this, I use a drill. I use a blowtorch.
What do you use a blowtorch for?
With the earth boxes, there's a plastic cover that controls the evaporation from the system.
Yes.
But you have to have a hole through it to plant a transplant. You can cut an X with a knife, but I think that looks kind of sloppy. So I have copper plumbing fittings at various sizes that I heat up, and I burn holes so the holes are all uniform.
Wow.
And the drill I use a tool called a max bit. It's a digging tool that drills a perfect hole for my transplants, the pots I grow my transplants in, so they just drop in through the plastic into the hole in the potting mix that I've already drilled. I use a battery-operated Black & Decker rototiller that I till my earth boxes.
Yes.
Rough up the mix a little bit.
Sure.
So I use kind of non-traditional
tools. You certainly do. Yeah. And not rakes and hoes. And so
no.
That's good. So we have a wonderful strawberry question. And I was just talking yesterday about strawberry plants. And so when do you start to grow strawberries in Louisiana, Mississippi?
That's generally going to be a really early spring. If you're going to do transplants, and then it's a spring crop,
right?
If you get down into Louisiana, they're transplanting in the fall because they're a little warmer, and they're ready for really early crops.
Right, and here in Florida we have really early crops because we have the Strawberry Festival in January and early February, and so strawberry plants. Transplants, which is the way we do it, we don't necessarily want to grow strawberries by seed.
Now, growing from seed, and look, have you seen how big a strawberry seed is?
Yeah, it's not very.
First of all, my fingers aren't made for little seeds that small. But it takes a while to get that seed germinated and get that seedling to a stage where you can transplant it. Mm-hmm. And most homeowners aren't equipped to do that.
Right.
And it's way easier to go the transplant.
So transplants are the best way to do it. You're going to start seeing them pop up in the Florida garden centers and nurseries, mom and pop nurseries, the independent garden centers. You're going to see them starting to pop up in November, and that's a great time to be planting them. They handle freezes.
Absolutely.
You know,
they do.
They love the cooler temperatures. And so you're going to see them in the next couple of weeks, and grab them when you see them because they go fast.
They go fast, that's right.
They do. And so do you would plant them in your earth boxes, though?
Oh, yeah, I would do it. I look at my earth boxes as valuable real estate. and for me, strawberries are easier to buy from somebody else who's growing them.
Right.
Rather than me grow.
Right.
Yeah.
Too much your valuable space.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, I just appreciate, you know, working with other people that actually can grow better than I can with something.
You know, we were just talking about that and saying that, you know, master gardeners and versus, you know, somebody who's just learning how to garden, is that all the same things that happen to the homeowners and our listeners happen to us too.
Yes.
You know, we get the same weeds. We get the dove weed. We get the, you know, sedge in our gardens.
Yep, yep.
And we get the insect issues. We get the aphids on our milkweed. And we just know what to do to resolve this,
right,
you know, the problem.
Right.
You know, and our plants die too. We just know why they die.
Well, favorite saying of mine, if you're not killing plants, you're not gardening. So.
We're going to be back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I am here with Dr. Gary Bachman. He is down for a special keynote address for the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences, Florida Master Gardeners. And you're here to speak at the conference. You're the keynote speaker. Good for you.
Yeah, it's, well, I'm one of four keynote speakers. So it's, but I get to kick off the whole shebang, which is a fun way that I can get everybody kick-started.
And off to a roaring start.
Yep, that's my goal.
That is wonderful. Well, I can't wait to. I will be there, and I'm interested. I am going to be attending a workshop on growing mushrooms on a log.
I'm looking forward to that. That was one of the breakout sessions, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, growing my own mushrooms and doing some mushroom foresting. And so if you have a question, 1-888-455-2967. We would love to hear from you and your gardening question. Tell us to what's growing in your garden and, you know, maybe what the temperatures are there. You know, we're going to get some cooler temperatures next week. We're going to be highs in the 70s, lows in the 50s. We Floridians love this. We look forward to it, don't
yes,
we, Lizzie?
Yes, 100%. And also, if you are new to Florida and this was your first hurricane, this is not how the weather is. After a hurricane, it's usually 106, we're all melting, and there's no wind. So don't get used to it.
That is the truth.
That's so, we were so appreciative because our electricity was out for about 36, 40 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, having no electricity, but those cooler temperatures where we could open the windows, it was so appreciated, God, so appreciated.
Absolutely.
And so we were looking forward to that fall temperatures. So we have a text message from Brenda in Ocoee, and perfect text message, Brenda, we have to say, proud of you. We're so name and city. What are your thoughts on using recycled water, Gary, to water the garden? It's much more accessible to our garden than our house water.
Yeah, I don't have a big problem with using recycled or reclaimed water. I would be hesitant for the vegetable garden, just personally.
Right.
But for keeping all your ornamentals going, I think that's a great way to go.
Right. It's important to use, you know, really good water on your vegetables. And that's important. And with reclaimed and recycled, you're going to get some, not necessarily contaminants. We don't think of it, it's not unhealthy.
Right.
But it's not the best.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's going to have a little bit more fertilizer in it, really, you know, and the nitrogen.
And like we were talking, maybe that means you don't have to fertilize as much.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's in your landscape, it's good. In vegetable gardens, you want to use the cleanest water you can use. All right. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. So, Gary, in your southern gardening all year round, you had a great article on loropetalums. And I love loropetalums only because of that burgundy color that you can get very easy. They take the heat. They take Florida weather, the southeast, and they have beautiful pink flowers on them.
In the springtime, aren't they just wonderful?
But I don't usually see them in landscapes because people are trimming them all the time. What do you say to somebody who wants to trim loropetalums like every month?
every month. And I know that I know people like that. You know, and that's fine. I think that's one of the beauties of gardening, that we can pick plants and we can, as horticulturists, we can make plants do what we want them to do when we want them to do that.
Right.
And so the people that are pruning every month, they want that beautiful burgundy foliage. And unfortunately, a lot of them look like little purple meatballs sometimes.
Yes.
But if that's what the home gardener wants, that's fantastic. But I like to tell folks, put the pruners down for a little bit.
Right.
Wait till spring and see what loropetalums do when they come out with those strap-like, flowers.
Right.
And then you might not want to prune every month.
Well, and it goes the same with ligustrums and viburnums. Both of them, the ligustrum trees, have beautiful white fragrant flowers on them. And I talk to people and they go, I didn't know it flowered. And that's because you cut it every month. You're cutting the blooms off.
And I have to tell you, you brought up the loropetalum. My column this week was on Jazz Hands loropetalum, the variegated loropetalum, and they're small, and they're gorgeous.
You never have to prune them, but that variegation of pink and kind of like purple and white is incredible.
And it's almost like they're in flower 12 months out of the year.
It is. Yeah. It's a great plant. I use them in my landscape designs, and, you know, sometimes they're hard to find. And so, you know, there are a lot of great companies that are selling plants online now that if you can't find them in the nursery, and I, by all means, you need to go into your nursery and say, I want to buy this.
Right.
Because if they don't know you want to buy it, they're going to keep bringing in the old stuff.
That's right. And it's important to visit your independent garden centers, not the box stores. Nothing wrong with the box stores.
No. What I usually say is, the plants that are really inexpensive that you can go in and buy for less than $10, those are box store plants.
Yep.
Okay, but if you want something magnificent, if you want something that not everybody has, if you want something that's unusual, mom and pop stores are the where to get them.
Absolutely, yeah. I promote the independents as much as I can.
Oh, that's I do too, and I just love, you know, here locally we have Appenberry's nursery and they're wonderful. I love going there and buying my plants there. Then we also have Palmer's and Lucas nursery, and you can find what you want there and they will order them for you too as well.
Yep. That's the beauty of the independents.
Independents. They can do what you want them to do. And so let's go to Rachel in Auburn or Ashburn. Auburndale. Okay. Good morning, Rachel. How can Gary and I help you? Good morning, Rachel. Nope. Okay, we're going to call back. Call us back, Rachel. Yeah. Try it again. And so we do have Jack, and he wants the advantages of soil boxes over pots.
Good question. I'm assuming that you're referring to the earth boxes. Mm-hmm. They're both considered containers. The earth box is self-watering, self-irrigating. It keeps the root zone more consistently moist than if you're growing just in a straight container. You're using the same potting mix. It's just that consistency of the root zone moisture, I think, trumps growing in an earth box over growing in a pot. Either way, though, are fantastic because I grow both ways, too.
Right. But the earth boxes are really good, especially if you travel a lot or you're not home a lot. They're going to have that watering system there for you, and whereas pots might, dry out a little bit if you don't get irrigation on them?
They could, but the reservoir that are in the earth boxes, Teresa, are kind of misleading because you still have to water as much as you normally would in a pot.
Right. It just holds on to it.
Just holds on to it better.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. We have my red bell peppers keep rotting, but my jalapenos flourish. They're in the same pot getting full sun. What do you suggest?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. But I would be willing to bet that your red bell peppers are sun scalding.
Yeah.
The bell peppers have a thinner skin than the jalapenos. Jalapenos can take more direct sunlight on the fruit than that sweet bell pepper. Mm-hmm. That's my guess without seeing seeing.
Would you check the soil?
No, not necessarily, because I think that this is sun scalding. They're just exposed to the sunlight. There isn't enough of a canopy to protect those fruit initially.
Okay. And so she's saying her red bell peppers, is she maybe not harvesting them soon enough?
Now that could be too. If you're leaving them on too long, they could
start to rot.
They could start to rot.
Because I mean, peppers are all one color. You know, they just, it's how long they stay on the plant.
Right.
And so they start off with green, and most people are used to eating green peppers, but that's not when they're ripe.
Right.
You know, so then they turn yellow and then the red.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's interesting. So.
Yeah. It would be great to see a picture of it. Seriously.
Yes.
Seriously.
That's where a picture would help.
Yeah.
But jalapenos, they love, and they can dry right on the, on the plant.
Yeah. It's just the skin is thicker. The flesh is thicker.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a tougher plant in regards to the environment.
Sure. It's like having a Scandinavian and a Scottish person with fair skin, and a Scandinavian that can have the tan in the wintertime there. So, you know, that's kind of the thing. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. Or if you're in the, you just like to text us, 23680.
Yes, please text us. We love the texts.
And just name and city there. So what are your plans? What are you going to be doing here in Florida on your stay here?
Well, as we said earlier, I'm going to be keynoting for the Florida Master Gardener Volunteers on Monday morning. Thursday and Friday, Kate and I, we're just going to vacation for a little bit. We're going to go over to Cocoa Beach. Then we're going to go to Newport Richey. We're kind of crisscrossing the state. And then we're going to catch up with our daughter and son-in-law for a day at Disney, and then have to go home and back to the grind.
Back to the wonderful grindstone.
The wonderful grind, yes.
We are so blessed to be doing what we are passionate about.
Isn't that the truth?
We may complain of the heat, we may complain of the insects, but we love what we do, so that's great. Well, enjoy your stay there. I'm looking forward to hearing all of your presentations. Now, where can somebody see the Southern Gardening TV?
The easiest place is to go to Southern Gardening on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We upload all of the Southern Gardening products there. Most of them make it over to Instagram. Or you could go to the Mississippi State University Extension website, which is extension.msstate.edu. And all the Southern Gardening products get posted right up on the front page.
There you go.
And for everybody. That's the easiest way.
Okay. And when we come back, I want to talk about potting soil.
Okay.
What kind of soil you use in your earth beds,
uh-huh,
and where you find them. So if you want to get your pen and paper ready, Gary's going to give us his tips on doing that.
This would be good information that everybody needs to know.
Right, because they're just a wonderful product. And they are great for, even if you're in an apartment or a balcony,
mm-hmm,
you know, you just have a little space, you can grow vegetables,
yes,
right?
Yes, you can. Yes,
you know, can. And so that's going to be wonderful. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. We have Dr. Gary Bachman, Mississippi State University here. It's such an honor and a thrill to have him in the studios. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, makers of mosquito bits and dunks. And that's a very important product for Florida right now after a hurricane. You want to make sure that you're getting rid of all that stagnant water in your landscape. And mosquito bits and dunks is the perfect organic way to do that. And you can find that at all the stores and your farm stores and feed stores, and then also online as well, SummitResponsibleSolutionsStudios.com. And I just want to bring up, they announced today, I'm very excited, Gary, about my trip to the Best of the English Gardens, and also we're going to go to the Chelsea Flower Show. Still have a couple of slots left for anyone who is interested in going, but they announced this week that the coronation of King Charles is going to be May 6th.
Oh, my.
So we are going to be going there. It's going to be after the coronation, which will be a little bit easier to get into everything.
Uh-huh.
But the Chelsea Flower Show, the honorariums for King Charles III, and also in memoriam of Queen Elizabeth II, is going to be amazing. If you'd like to join us, if you would go to the Better Lawns .com website, you can see everywhere where we're going, and we've got a whole page just set for it, and you can contact Art in Bloom Garden Tours, and you can join us, and we're looking forward to doing that. Just come with us, and we're going to geek out at all the beautiful gardens. And so also, too, what kind of vegetables? We've been talking about vegetables this morning. What can you plant in October here in Zone 9? Through the state of Florida, zone up through Tallahassee down to Miami. You can grow the winter vegetables, beets, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbages, carrots, cauliflower, celery, collards, kohlrabi, lettuce, mustard, onions, peas, potatoes, radicchio, radishes, rhubarb, roquette, rutabagas. I love rutabagas in stew. They're so delicious. Spinach, strawberries, Swiss chard, and turnips, neeps and tatties. They're potatoes. And so, Gary, if somebody wanted to grow turnips and potatoes, or leeks and scallions, uh-huh. Can they use the vegetables that they buy at the grocery store?
Some of them you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the scallions you could. I wouldn't have a problem doing that.
What about sweet potatoes and regular potatoes?
Sweet potatoes, let me just tell you, I think sweet potatoes are just easier just to buy them at the grocery store.
Uh-huh.
But regular potatoes, yeah, you could. You have to be careful. A lot of the potatoes that we see in the grocery store have been treated with a hormone. It's not nothing terrible, but it just inhibits
the growth,
the eyes to sprout.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got some like under your sink that have sprouted eyes, yeah, you can go ahead and use those. I have bought like the fancy little baby potatoes, mm-hmm. like the reds and the blues and the whites all together. Those have worked out pretty well for me growing in the garden when I couldn't find seed potatoes.
Right, and so do you plant them in your earth boxes, or do you plant them in a potato bag or a container?
Don't plant them in the earth boxes. The earth boxes are too moist.
Mm-hmm.
I've used grow bags. I really didn't like the grow bags.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed to be wasn't compatible. But I grow potatoes in either a 15 or a 25 gallon nursery container.
Oh, there you go.
And just as they sprout up, keep adding some more potting mix in on top of it, and do it that way. You have to dump it out to harvest, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's part of your farm chores.
Yes, absolutely it is.
All right, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. Let's go to our text message. So Rachel did text in. Thank you so much, Rachel. She lives in Auburndale. Perfect text message there. And it's a suburb of Lakeland, Florida. Her question, Gary, is in regard to hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. She's been told they don't grow very well down here, but yet she's seen some beautiful growing hydrangeas around town.
Right.
Can you recommend which side of the house I should plant her hydrangeas on? which type of hydrangea would you recommend for the area? So Rachel's originally from Denver, so she does have a learning curve.
Right, yeah. It's a little bit different here than Denver, isn't it?
But you don't have to shovel snow here, so it's, you know.
That's right. I think you said at one point you don't have to shovel sunshine.
You do not, so it's a great place to live. Yeah. So what would you recommend for hydrangeas?
Well, first of all, we talked earlier, the oak leaf hydrangeas are native. They're native all through the Southeast, and they're a great choice. Probably should, you know, kind of at least afternoon shade. If not full shade, just to reduce the heat load. If you're talking about some of the others, like some of the paniculatas, mm-hmm. may be okay with afternoon shade.
But and very organic soils. They don't take the sandy soils.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, they do well. And it's just they're going to be on the higher end of the watering.
Yep.
And they're going to need organic soils. Full sun in the morning is fine, but afternoon shade makes it all work. So whatever is the southeast side of your home would be the best.
I think so. That would give some protection. I wouldn't go full on north side.
Yeah.
No, because they do need that sunshine.
They do. Yeah. They do. Great question. Thank you so much, Rachel. And then so we get Tom, a master gardener for Orange County, listening to the program. Thank you so much for listening, Tom. And the mushrooms growing on the logs, it's being saved to a Zoom, but you need to register for the Florida Master Gardener Conference to get that. So you can do that online, I think, and you can do it virtually,
mm-hmm.
and then get the access to the Zoom. So, Tom, check out your emails. You probably have it coming from Gainesville, the University of Florida, on how to register for the virtual conference.
I have a caller that called in, and they had a question.
Okay.
Theo from Orlando wants to know, he lives in an apartment, he has low light, but he would like to plant some veggies. What kind of suggestions do you guys have?
So what would you suggest for low light?
For low light, really wouldn't want to go a tomato. Tomato needs a higher light. But for an apartment type situation, something like lettuces would be great.
I think anything that needs fruit or produces fruit is not going to be good because they usually need a little bit more sunlight.
Right.
But anything that's leafy, kale, your lettuces, your cabbages, yeah. I think you can do all of those. And even onions will do okay in the shade.
Onions would be fine too.
Yeah. So anything that doesn't produce fruit, you can grow. And so I would even say that, you know, I'm just trying to think here.
Well, even radishes.
Radishes, like, your beets.
Radishes would work. Beets would work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anything that doesn't have fruit, you can grow. Theo, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to be back with more Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If you missed any of today's show, it's been a great show. We have Dr. Gary Bachman from Mississippi State University, author of Southern Gardening All Year Round, and he is with us today. If you missed any of it, you missed the first hour, that's okay. We'll forgive you because you can always go to betterlawns.com and hear the podcast. You can hear it again on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Audio Boom, and even my website, she-consulting.com.
Well, Teresa, we have one of our loyal listeners, Roy from Windermere. He called in, and he said that he has knockout roses and wanted to know about cutting them back here in the wintertime.
Okay, so Gary, here in the wintertime, we don't really have to do the same things they do up north.
Right.
Because roses grow year-round here.
Right.
But if they got a little leggy over the summertime,
yeah.
This is a great time to cut them.
It really is. Our standard recommendations for knockouts in particular is you decide how big you want to let them get. And we always say middle of February, cut them down halfway, and then say middle of July, end of July, cut them back a third. And that gives you really two good flower flushes mm-hmm. through the springtime, and then you get that flush through the winter, you know, through
as well. Yeah. But roses bloom better when they are cut.
Absolutely. They
and
do.
So, you know, if you're hesitant to cut your flowers down, and you can cut anything that flowers after it flowers.
Uh-huh.
So you're pretty safe that way. And so, because we don't recommend cutting our springtime blooming, ornamentals
in the fall
because you're cutting off the blooms for next year.
Yeah.
But anything that blooms after it blooms, you're pretty safe to cut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So good question, Roy. And so, yeah, you can go ahead and cut them now. They'll be fine. But just you want to cut them sporadically throughout the year and just keep them under control.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a really great question to Earth. Box recommendations
sure.
if you want to try EarthBox gardening.
EarthBoxes, as you can probably tell, I'm sold on it.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy the commercial box. You can run down to Ellenton at the EarthBox Garden Center where it all began and get materials there.
That's Ellenton, Florida.
Ellenton, Florida. And if you want to build your own, you know, if you're a DIY gardener, yeah, there's plans all over the internet give you the same effect. The process isn't patented or anything. It's just a great way to grow.
Isn't it? That's wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about reusing soil in mm-hmm. earth boxes. What kind of soil do you use in your earth boxes?
I use professional growing mix. This is one of the situations where you get what you pay for.
Right.
And so it's really good to get a good professional sphagnum peat core mix primarily as far as the mix to use. ProMix, MetroMix,
mm-hmm.
Independent garden centers will carry professional mixes.
Right.
And you need to become a label reader. If you read the ingredients at the grocery store of what's in the food that you buy, potting mix has to have the ingredients listed in the order of the most to the least. And if it doesn't say sphagnum peat, if it doesn't say core as your number one ingredient, you would need to use another bag.
And so also, too, is that here in Central Florida, right around the state of Florida, is a company called Reliable Peat. They have their own gardener special. And I use it in all of my clients' boxes and raised beds. It is wonderful.
See my hat?
There you go.
Philip Spark, that's a producer in Mississippi. I use their products.
Yes. And so find your local, no matter where you are in the country, find your local soil producer, your mulch mm-hmm. companies. They usually will have a product, a soil mix that you can find. And so read the label of the potting soil that you buy.
Yep.
Great question.
Yep.
And so, but then that leads me to the question here is, how often do you reuse soil in earth boxes?
Yes, you do. Remember, you're buying a very expensive product. You want to use it as long as you can. And the peat-based mixes do not break down over years as far as much as a composted product does.
Right.
And so I have some earth boxes that are 15 years old. I have never dumped the mix out of one of my earth boxes. I'm always adding to it.
Adding to it because it decomposes.
It does decompose. And you spill it when you're harvesting. Yeah,
sure.
But you're continually adding new material to that system, and you never have to replace it unless you get a disease in there.
Right, and that's what I say is when you have a disease, then you take it out, solarize.
Right, but I have never had 15 years of growing two crops of tomatoes a year, you know, fusarium or verticillium wilt, from doing a crop year after year after year in the same spot.
That's wonderful because, I mean, it's important to understand there is a soil health, there's a soil web cycle, and that mycorrhizae and also the microbes are good in there. You don't want to throw those away and start over from scratch.
That's right.
It's important. Good question. Great question. Now we have another question is how to get rid of oxalis weed, the bane of my existence, in 3x4x15 beds, Gary.
Oh, my. It's,
I'm so glad you're answering this one.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, if you've got oxalis in 4x15 beds, what I would do, I would go through and I would use Roundup on it and then take care of the plants right now because some of them are going to overwinter. They're already dropping seeds. Then in the spring, start looking at appropriate pre-emerges And you still may have to do some post-emerge.
It's going to take a couple of seasons or a couple of years. So it's important. So people, so they understand, oxalis is that shamrock-looking plant, and it's a bulb. If you just pull the leaves off, it's going to come back with a fury.
Right. And if you just pull the plant, the seed capsules explode.
Yes.
And so they can throw seed up to 3.5 feet. So as you're pulling those plants, you think you're doing a good job. No, you're just spreading more seed.
And I am going to be spraying that Roundup on. I have some oxalis coming up. And now there's some varieties, because oxalis is on the market as an ornamental.
Yes.
And there's some varieties, but they're sterile. They don't really spread and cause issues. The big burgundy one, I don't know the name of it.
Right. They spread by rhizomes.
Right.
And yeah, they don't throw seeds like the...
No,
like,
they
like
don't
the,
explode.
Like the bad weed kind do.
Okay, so you need to take care of that. So you're recommending that they use an herbicide on it.
Yep.
And get rid of it, and then keep on top of it.
Right.
Okay. Yep. So we have a text message. What plants would you suggest to attract bees? I had a milkweed, but it didn't get very big, and the few bees I saw liked it, but I think it ran out of juice. I will tell you my favorite.
Okay.
African blue basil.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The bees love it.
You know, that's one thing. You know, the basils, they go to seed, or they flower. You know, we're conditioned to pinch those flower heads off.
Right.
No, leave some of the flower heads go, or have some plants dedicated just for flower production,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get bees. Anything like that.
So, yeah. And again, your salvias, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So any plants that, you know, tubular plants, the ones, the herbs, you know, they're going to do really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Milkweed, what do you suggest? People need to have a lot of milkweed because they do get eaten.
Right. And that's one of the things that's funny. Every spring and summer, I get a question. We planted our milkweeds for the monarchs, but we have all these caterpillars on there. They're eating the plants. How do I get rid of the? And there's another instance where I have to talk the person off the ledge and say, no, those are monarch caterpillars. They're supposed to eat the milkweed.
I had three women come into my nursery that I was working at, and I had taught a butterfly class, and they came back about 6 weeks later, and they go, Teresa, we did everything you told us to do. And I said, okay, that's good. And they go, but we have a problem. I go, okay, that's bad. I said, what's the problem? All we have are caterpillars. And I go, ladies, where do butterflies come from? They didn't care. They didn't want caterpillars.
They didn't want the caterpillars.
So no, you got to have some. You got to have your plants.
Yeah.
Put your nectar or your host plants in the back of your garden,
right?
So you don't need to see them, and then you know, just don't look at them.
Yeah.
When the caterpillars are there.
That's one thing at the
give them privacy
at the nano farm. I have a whole along my back fence are 3, 4, 5 different species of milkweeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to encourage the encourage the habitat. And I don't care if they come and eat them, because I'll just plant more.
Okay, so Gary, real quick, would you use ProMix soil to start seeds?
And the answer is yes. It would be a great seed starting base.
Wonderful. I want to thank Lizzie for a great show. Lizzie, thank you for handling everything. You did an awesome job today. It's been fun. I want to thank Dr. Gary Bachman with Mississippi State University, Southern Gardening TV, and the author of Southern Gardening All Year Round. Gary, you got to come back.
Oh, I definitely will. I just so appreciate, you know, the hospitality, letting me come in, just kind of hang out, just, you know, spur of the moment for a couple hours with you and Lizzie.
You're just a really cool dude, just so you know. Not only do you have the knowledge, but, man, you are really cool.
That is great. Thank you, Lizzie. Appreciate it.
From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, maker of organic mosquito bits and dunks and organic year-round oil spray, I'm Teresa Watkins. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.